you look at this change with NIL, right?
Mm. I mean, oh, yeah.
How coaches have to shift their approach so much, and there needs to be a lot of contingency plans. But it's so important too, what I've learned from that, how important it is to understand that also can't define, I can't let that define me as a coach. None of us mm-hmm. can, right? Mm-hmm. That it's okay. You know, just because that didn't work out, that doesn't mean that everything that's been built up around that is out the window.
Welcome to the Good Athlete Podcast, the voice of the Good Athlete Project.
Today, Jim sits down with Riley Dampier, the head rowing coach and high performance program director at OKC National High Performance Center. Continuing her 16th year coaching rowing, Coach Dampier continues to build a strong development program for rowing in the United States. Since 2010, Dampier has coached various national team athletes at the Olympic Games, Senior U23 and U19 World Championships, Pan American Games, and World Cups. All of her success is no accident. She continues to develop training programs, technical coaching ability, and has become an all-around expert at innovating and integrating emerging science in rowing. We're so excited to bring you this episode and to share with you some of the great things happening inside OKC's National High Performance Center. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the Good Athlete Podcast. And now, Riley Dampier.
First, I just want to hear, we've had you on the podcast before. Yeah. So we'll reference that in the show notes. I think it was episode 67, mm-hmm. so a long time ago. The first question is, we want to hear a story from the most challenging time you had as an athlete.
I think probably one of the thing that jumps out in my memory is not making the Olympic team in 2008. And it was the end of the selection process, and I just remember just the moments, the strokes that I had, that I knew these were the strokes, these are the meters, and this is the seconds that I have to define whether or not I'm going to be an Olympian this year or not. So I remember that. I remember looking for one last shot and having to ask my coach if that was on the table, if that was an option. Could I have one more seat race in rowing? That's what they're called when you're going up against one other person for a seat, of course, in the boat. And I was going for the women's quad. And I don't think, certainly not outside of competition, have I ever sweat so much just sitting there waiting to have a conversation with the coach asking for that opportunity. And I got it. And I lost it. And so that was that. And now I can reflect on, it was a part of an incredible time in my life.
Yeah.
And I am so grateful to have been in that position, to even be able to ask for one last shot in an Olympic seat. Like, you know, I lived an incredible moment, throughout that summer and the years leading up to it. And I don't regret any of it at all.
Where were you training for this?
So this was in Princeton, New Jersey, where selection was happening. Yeah, I lived in D.C. at the time, but the camp was up in Princeton, New Jersey, right there, right by the university campus.
Sure.
And I just remember that being absolutely, a very big moment for me, just that huge challenge of being so close, but also...
But so far, how far is so far? Are we seconds away?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, other pieces play into it, right?
Sure.
There's, you know, it's not just one piece, right, that gets you on an Olympic team in the sport of rowing.
Right.
When you're vying for a seat in a selection group, it really is the accumulation of many pieces. So I wouldn't say that I missed that seat that day, and that was it. I had not finished on the right side of it enough times. Which is to say, I was close in that I think I was the last person seat raced.
Right.
But, still, I was every day I was on the edge. You know, I wasn't somebody in the boat that, kind of, we knew we already had,
there's no foregone conclusion,
made the ticket. Yeah.
Right.
And I was definitely not that person.
Right.
So,
that's wild.
So, yeah. And of course, looking back on it, I think looking back as a coach, I can say, yeah, you were so far away from that guarantee. Certainly, but at the time, I was totally immersed and just felt, as I said, every second, every stroke, every meter in that pursuit, days like that. So,
well, okay. So that was the challenge. The disappointment sounds like was the challenge.
Yep.
What was fun about the buildup? Like,
just,
what did you enjoy about that?
Having stayed composed with putting that kind of pressure on myself.
Yeah.
The challenge was staying composed to have the coach say yes, you know, right, and actually get the shot. And I've never really thought about it that way. It's challenging to me because I remember the pressure I felt, and I feel like, and you know, it's always easy, hindsight is 2020, to say that I did my best and that I certainly don't recall anything I would regret, but I also don't feel like I caved under the pressure.
No,
right? That I was able to.
You're still right there.
Do
in the
it.
Hunt.
Do the thing with the opportunity that I was given. So that I think was the challenge: is being able to rise to the occasion.
Do you remember strategies at that time, or was this just
no chance?
No,
that was survival.
That was just, yeah,
that was survival. Yep.
That's incredible. Just to be in that conversation, and of course, you know, this is
No, it was an incredible thing. You know, to be there, and I think there's so many decisions and things I could have done differently, but those moments, that final year of my career as an athlete, there's no regrets. And that's, as you said, the haze in the barn at that point. There's a lot of things I could have done before that, but it just, for a lot of reasons, I didn't, you know.
Fair enough.
And not so much, a lot were in my control, but back then you didn't have the same kind of, you know, informational outpouring online. I mean, we were called up, we were, you know, approached in person. There was not this very public, you know, set of criteria or opportunities where you had to show what you could do.
Right.
It was show up or don't show up. The coach hasn't heard of you, so you're not going to get your shot.
There was,
you know, information just was not as available as it is today, right? So anyway.
So you asked for your shot. You got it. Mm-hmm. You missed, but barely. But barely. And then did you immediately transition that into coaching? Was that like pretty much your next step?
Yeah, it was, but not intentionally.
Okay.
at all. I'll say something really personal.
Yeah.
And I guess just put it out there. So I was in a relationship with one of my teammates, and she made the boat.
Oh, wow.
So she made the boat. And now I went from an Olympic hopeful to having to be a cheerleader, right, for my partner. And I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Yeah.
I would not.
What did those dinner table conversations look like?
Well, she was gone, right? Oh. So it was very close to the Olympics trials for rowing. We could take it right up to the last moment kind of thing. That the team was not selected until the summer of the Olympics. So we didn't have a lot of conversations, and I think early on I just totally held it all in, what I was feeling, and just put it all out there for her in terms of support, but didn't show her I was really feeling. So
when did you get to address that?
I don't think we really ever did.
Okay.
I don't think we really ever did. But so anyway, so it was a really tough transition.
Sure.
I was painting a ton.
Love that.
I was feeling very sorry for myself, really indulging in that, all of that, which is okay. I mean, I certainly tell other athletes to do that. Like, feel it now. Don't let
feel
this come
That's
up.
That's great advice, yeah.
Come up later. And I felt it. Man, I really mourned the loss of this part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent that summer painting and trying to figure out. I had to quit my job to do the selection camps. We all do. So I was looking for a job. I started temping. And as the fall season started after Beijing, the head coach at the club I had been training at said, well, what are you doing? I think it was probably a phone conversation. And he said, well, you know, what are you doing? I said, I don't know. I mean, I think I want to coach someday. He's like, no, well, I need you right now.
Wow.
Like, you got to come down now. Like, it, you know, effectively saying, I've given you a lot.
Yeah, right, right.
Time to pay it forward.
Yeah.
You know, so let's go. So I started helping him, just assistant, driving the motorboat. Nothing more, really, to start. And I've been telling myself, I just need a break. I need to decompress. I need to reflect. And my coach said, yeah, okay, you done?
Like, you done?
Are you over it? Let's go. And that was it. And I never stopped from then. So I probably had about 2 months between stopping my rowing career and then jumping right into coaching.
Back into the boat.
So
yeah,
so I got right into it. And I'm so glad I did. I'm glad I didn't delay it. You know, there's no reason to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just fell in love with it, you know, right away, and started to shift into more responsibilities and, you know, more roles to take on. And my coach said, yeah, perfect, this is what I was looking for. Thank you.
Amazing.
So, and we have a great rapport, and I'm so grateful for him. He's a great mentor and still is.
What's his
still
name?
Is. Matt Madigan.
Matt Madigan.
Yeah, that's my coach. Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. So yeah, I jumped right into it. Again, not intentionally thinking I need to, I don't know, go find myself. And
sure.
I did.
Yeah, you found it back in the boat.
In the launch, yeah, in the motorboat.
All right, so you found yourself back into coaching.
Yep.
How were you able to pay some of that forward? Like, what was your strategy? Did you take some of those things you wish you would have done and give them to the athletes? Or what was your coaching strategy early on?
Early on?
Yeah. Right, we were talking about phase one of a coaching career.
Yeah,
right?
I think, right, for all of us, it's just trying to regurgitate everything all at once.
Right.
You know, make sure that you're saying everything
sure.
that needs to be said, that you think needs to be said in that moment. And it turned out, you don't really, probably got to say about 1% of those things
right.
as a coach, as I've learned over the years. But again, Matt, it wasn't that I was immediately given a megaphone
right.
either. It was an opportunity for me to watch the sport from that lens, from
mm-hmm.
that frame up on the launch boat, on the motorboat. And I think my strategy at first was to start to see it in a way that I had never seen
mm-hmm.
before. So my strategy was just absorb, take it in. And then when I was given an opportunity to speak, as I said, and coach, I was very eager to say probably way more than I needed to.
I get that instinct completely.
Right. Say everything. But I was so excited. I mean, I was also, okay, well, then you start to cherry pick from all your coaches. And I had this,
mm-hmm.
I had in my very nonlinear path to, you know, that selection camp in 2008, I was coached by a lot of people. And I was 30 years old at that point. I mean, I'd been rowing for 12 years. And mm-hmm. in that 12 years, I probably had, I don't know, a dozen coaches,
right.
you know, that significantly impacted my my rowing and my now coaching career. So I would say I was, you know, immediately started to cherry pick my favorite things from all those coaches, and it, without even understanding it was really good or really bad about anything
right.
that I had learned over the years. I was just making assumptions
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what really stood out to me, and then if something resonated with me, oh, I was going to resonate with everybody,
right?
Right. So
totally. That's exactly right. Like, what was most, because I think phase one of my career was the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, to pull it to the football, you know, I tend to use football metaphors, unfortunately. But yeah, I feel like, you know, I think I'm hearing the same thing. What was resonant to me, can I turn up the volume on this
mm-hmm. yep.
and like do that right. even more yep. intensely
yep.
was probably my downfall.
Yeah.
You know, that's not always what works.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's almost like stage one is the self-awareness of like, here's mm-hmm. what works for me, I want to pass
mm-hmm.
that on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really
yep.
nice and good intention.
Right.
And then level two is probably
right.
the empathy level.
Okay.
So
right.
you have the self-awareness, then it's
right.
like, but is that going to work for this person?
Yes.
Is that what
exactly.
they are going to, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
what did that look like for you? When did that start to click over?
Well, I had also this incredible opportunity. I look at it and as such, but although some coaches might not in mm-hmm. the world of sports with masters athletes, right? So a lot of sports have masters athletes, and rowing always delivers at any boat club. You'll find a group of adults that have either rowed in college and, you know, spent their another 20 years not in a boat and then got back in later in life, and they know everything because they, you know, they were coached 30 years ago in wooden boats, wooden, you know, kind of thing. So it's just it's a great pool of people that come down to the boathouse, especially in a city like Washington, D.C., where I was at the time. So you have some really powerful people, some just high-level people that come down at 5 a.m. and they want an hour and a half, be a really good workout coach, and then I got my job. So I was working – so I had this opportunity to work with the Masters women's team at Potomac because I was – you know, sitting during a session, an indoor session, one of the ladies came over to me and said, well, I mean, couldn't you also just be here at 5 a.m., do you think? Could you actually coach us too? We need some help. And I said, and at the time, in my eagerness, yes, I'm in.
Right.
So before I knew it, I was coaching a lot of hours every week from, you know, it was wild my first year. So I started coaching the Masters women as an assistant coach, and that is really what I will say to anybody is where I developed my voice as a coach, because this opportunity to work with adults who were very quick to let me know when something was working and not working, unlike a youth athlete who's not sure, right? They're learning, you're their teacher, they're going to try to deliver, and Masters athletes generally say, no, it's not going to work.
They got a pretty good idea of what they want.
So I had a lot of fun creating drills, you know, using those cherry-picked drills and technical elements that resonated with me, trying to apply them to the Masters women. Some worked, some didn't work, but I was able to really hone things that were now in my toolbox for coaching. And that was so important for my development as a coach in the early stages, to have a group of athletes trying to become Olympians. So I had this group that I was coaching, you know, on the side with Matt Madigan. And then I also had this group of women who are not trying to be Olympians. They're just trying to enjoy the water, enjoy, you know, this community of women. And but they were also very competitive.
Were they competing still? There's a Masters Nationals.
And some of them were extremely competitive. And so it was just such that was a great opportunity. So that's in my phase too, I guess I had this great opportunity to have Olympic hopefuls where I had to deliver much more clear, concise coaching, and the Masters women who were much more, it was much more of a conversation, right? And use what I was learning from them.
That is sort of a blessing, isn't it?
It was such a blessing.
That's cool.
Anybody that asks, what should I do at the beginning? Coach Masters.
For sure.
Coach Masters at the beginning.
That's brilliant. Yeah. I don't know if that's always possible, of course, but like I'm just imagining like the feedback that you would get from a youth athlete. I'm looking at some of those young kayakers on the wall. Would not be as clear and direct and as honest and as experience-based as that crew that you were with.
Exactly. And so to now have to communicate the sport to some, again, this is a very diverse group of women. So we had one woman who recently had become a widow, and she had never done any sports in her life. She came down to the boathouse at 65. Someone said, I do this, you should come down too sometimes.
Oh,
she came out 65. She's now home alone. She wants to be involved in something, never having played sports in her entire life. Is on the same team as a woman who did row in college, and she kind of kept up with it. And now she's in her 60s too, and she's been rowing for 40 years.
Yeah.
And to have to put those two people in the same group, again, in the boat, because that's how the sport works, right? Everybody's got to work together in a boat. And to have to communicate to the sport, to this woman who is going to ask why 20 times during a session. And this woman who's, what's the stroke rate? What are we doing here? Let's go. Was such a good opportunity for me to have, learn that empathy within the sport.
That struck a chord in me somehow. The idea that those two people could come together, they share this one common thing, which is they are embodied, right. You know, and they're going to go do this physical task together. Right. I'm picturing like what I would be doing in my 60s. There's sitting at a coffee shop does sound great, but going through that, I mean, the community that's built, the relationship that's built, like automatically after one day in the boat together, can you imagine?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, it was so informative for me as a coach early on.
I love that. All right, so now you're on a good track. What was the most challenging or intense moment of your coaching career so far?
I don't know, Jim. I'm going to have to think about this a little bit.
That's all right.
Because there have been many. I don't know if I could say what the most is. I got to think about that a little
That's
bit.
Fair.
Let me come back to that one.
You can come back to that one. There, we were just talking to someone last night at the event. There's something about rowing that if anyone has not been on it, at least on an erg, by the way, I have all my assistant coaches now try a 2K. That's like my new thing.
Well, it's the thing, you know, that moment, the memory's coming back to me. I think the most challenging time I have, and maybe I'll come up with.
It's all right.
But right now I'm thinking one of the biggest challenges for me was being able to essentially recover from emotionally and really put into perspective that what would happen after a specific athlete had left my team. So there was an athlete who had invested a lot in, and he was just a phenomenal athlete. And was really making a contribution to the sport, and he made a decision to just change boat classes, which was the right decision for him personally. It was good. It set him on a
boat classes like
between sculling and sweep rowing.
Got
it. From sculling in a quad to rowing in the board, and he it was a great decision. It was the right decision for him for sure. But that day when the last practice. I just remember leaving that practice as a young coach. I was crushed
that
I couldn't, you know, convince him to stay doing this, knowing that he shouldn't, you know, stay.
Right.
But just if only, or this could have been different.
Did that feel like somehow a personal insult to you a little bit?
It wasn't an insult.
You're going to miss the relationship, the time together.
Oh man, I think it was no.
None of the above.
I mean, but honestly, I think, a little bit. Of course, I care about this person, Trent, and I still do. I see him every once in a while, and it's great. I'm really glad that we're still in touch. But at the time, it so defined what I could do next as a coach. So to me, it was this player, you know, on that needed to be in this boat in order for me to progress the boat forward. Was removing himself, that it really shifted what I could do in that moment in time in the build-up. That was in the build-up to 16, essentially.
So you thought maybe that vote had a chance if he was a part of it?
Yeah, to do something much bigger and not necessarily be the Olympic boat in 16. This was in that build-up, so it was early on in that quadrennial. But I just remember thinking, if he stayed, this could really set the tone for something so incredible that we could do here. And without him, he was so important, so critical.
Yeah.
So that was a huge challenge to me, knowing that I had to pivot so hard in what my plans were, what I wanted to do, what I saw happening. You know, so again, as a young coach, the first time that happens to you, that to me was
devastating.
It was devastating.
It can be. I hear stories like that all the time. Yeah. It's the interesting other side of having a clear vision is that when it doesn't come to life for whatever reason and you have to pivot, there's like a mourning process. It's like the mourning of potential. It's a real thing.
For sure.
So how to like appropriately, this is going to sound too intense for a competitive setting, but it's a real thing, to appropriately like sort of grieve the loss of that vision that you were hoping would come to life.
Right.
Enough so, and like, but keep your wits about you so that you can then pivot and solve whatever problem might be at hand or create the next vision.
Exactly. And I think for me at that time, it was so important. Since then, what I've learned is that I need to expect that to be one of the options that happens, right? One of the potential outcomes.
Sure.
So as athletes move and shift since that first one, he remains the strongest athlete that has shifted in this way. So I guess I feel like I was hit really hard early on with that, with that kind of a challenge. So since then, it's been a lot easier for me to make plans with more than one option.
Right.
As much as you can.
Man, what an interesting, I'm going to riff on it here because I keep hearing there seems to be this very, sometimes there's a pretty intense driven idea that I hear it online all the time, burn the ships or burn the boats. Have you heard that before?
No.
Like, don't make a plan B sort of. It's kind of a meathead, Instagram-y sort of thing, which sounds like the right idea from a performance perspective, but is not.
Absolutely,
Like, you know, you can't evacuate all potential contingency plans. That doesn't make a lot of sense in true practice. Maybe if you're, I'm picturing someone like under a max effort back squat, like maybe that's a time where there is nothing else but this thing.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. In designing a team, building a team in coaching, that's
you
part of it.
Do that.
You've got to have the contingency plans.
You've got to.
You have to. At least not have them so fully blocked off that when you need them, maybe you don't spend all of your time thinking, like overthinking about all the potential contingencies. But
I definitely, and I love that kind of mindset where there are no options, right? Like, the rabbit is real.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before. I've got that set up in my gym because I want my athletes to see that, you know, as the greyhound races around the track chasing the rabbit, the greyhound does not know if the rabbit's real or not.
Right.
Like, that is, doesn't matter. So that's the approach I'm looking for from my athletes.
Yeah.
And I think at times it certainly suits a coach as well.
Sure.
But
that's a tool though. Like that's a mindset. Exactly. Right. At times that's perfect.
Times.
The rabbit is real. I love that.
Yeah. So, but I think absolutely, especially, which does impact what I do specifically. But when you look at this change with NIL, right?
Mm.
I mean,
that,
how coaches have to shift their approach so much, and there needs to be a lot of contingency plans.
It does.
I guess it's so important too. What I've learned from that, although that was so challenging for me to accept at the moment, how important it is to understand that also can't define, I can't let that define me as a coach. None of us can, right? Mm-hmm. That we can still be building, moving forward, and doing the right thing and doing exactly what we want to do, even if it's not, and not have that rely on other people, right?
Interesting, yeah.
Yep, so that was what was important to me is that it's okay, you know, just because that didn't work out, that doesn't mean that you know, everything that's been built up around that is out the window with it. That, you know, just putting it in perspective, it really is helping put
perspective. Sure. I remember I'm having a very vivid flashback to a lift that did not go well with one of my athletes very early on. And maybe this didn't happen to you. I think it did happen to me subconsciously. I was like, well, because this person didn't hit that lift, our chance to win has probably just gone. I mean, we were in that tight of a race that our chance to win is probably gone. And I remember feeling so, I couldn't even name it. There you go. So I couldn't even name what was coming up, but something pretty intense was coming up. And I think what I've learned along the way to combat that, now I really am just making this about me, I'm sorry, but what I've learned along the way to combat that is like self-forgiveness has to come really fast for me. You know, like, because otherwise, and that's why, you know, we've talked about it countless times, but the alignment of mental health and high performance, however you want to name that conversation, it's like, well, if I can't get to a place where I can forgive myself fast, then I have no opportunity to support that kid or coach up the next kid or actually get myself to another strategically advantageous level.
Right.
Because I'm kind of, whether I realize it or not, it's coming off as like toughness or intensity, but really I'm just like wallowing in this disappointment that I'm feeling.
Yeah.
When I should be there for that kid and prepping the next kid so that we together can get to a better place.
That the recovery phase.
Recovery. Let's speak of recovery. So in the background right here is the beautiful Oklahoma City skyline. Behind us is the Oklahoma River. What do you do to recover? And maybe that's a segue to kind of a heavy-handed prompt, which is, can you tell us about some of your most fun times out in that city or yeah, beyond?
It's been great. So I have been surprised endlessly by Oklahoma City and everything that it has to offer as a resident. I came here, I have to say, without very high expectations for how much I would enjoy my life here. I came here as a single woman who didn't really have any friends here, didn't know anybody, coming from Washington, D.C., having moved from Seattle, San Francisco, San Diego. So covered the coast, a lot of good friends, and now it was coming to the middle. And I am so happy with my life here. So, this city offers so much in terms of just being able to enjoy all that the city has to offer.
Yep.
Again, it's not a very, very crowded city, but nonetheless, you certainly feel a great sense of community throughout the city. So I love spending time in one of the neighborhoods, like the Plaza District here. It's fantastic.
I gotta go to the plot. Have I been there? Where would that be relative to us? So there's Bricktown, there's Midtown.
Yeah, it's just to the northwest of Midtown.
Okay.
Yep. We can go there later.
I love it.
Check it out. Yeah, there's some great local shops, local artists, tattoo shops. There's some really great.
I'm ready.
Yeah, that's right. Cleared the way. But there's a little bit of everything.
Sure.
But it's also kind of a funky neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of graffiti art up
love
there,
that.
And but some really great restaurants. I was just there the other night, and I heard and through some open doors some live music, which I've never heard. I guess a couple times, but it's very unusual. I feel like, and that was on a Tuesday night.
You know, oh, that's
to hear
cool.
Live music up in the Plaza District. So it's always growing, constantly evolving, and it's really cool. So that's a great district. There's a lot to do there. Just walk around. You're going to explore and find some just nooks and crannies and, you know, some of that graffiti art and just new spots.
I like the cool graffiti time. Weirdly is like kind of a good, like good graffiti is a good sign, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like street art.
Exactly.
It's cool. Some of the best. Yeah. Anyway, so some of your favorite restaurants.
Yeah. So
within those districts.
Oh, man. So I have a lot of favorites. I would say because it depends on, you know, the style of cuisine, which is also fantastic. You think you're coming to Oklahoma City, you're just going to get steak or, you know,
which I would be okay
basic,
with.
Right?
But.
But there is a lot of diversity in cuisine here. And so, depending on what you're feeling, there's some great meals. But if you're going to go get a steak, and a lot of people who are locals would disagree with me.
Okay.
I feel like there's some better places to go. But I love the old school Cattleman's Steakhouse.
Cattleman's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Going over to Stockyard City.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to buy your cowboy boots, your hat, you know, 10-gallon hat. But it's also just, it's a small, you know, again, a small community. And some really great people you can find over there, and it got a couple great little bars to walk into for sure.
There, and who were we just talking to? I can't remember the gentleman's name. He was talking about Mare de Lao.
Yeah, Mare de Lao. Yeah. Well, it's
Laotian. What do you? How do you pronounce it?
Laotian.
Laotian cuisine.
Yep.
You said it's unbelievable.
Yep. So it's
Who would have guessed?
We were just talking about this when Liz just brought it up that it was written up in USA Today.
Oh, cool.
But all over the place. I think the head chef was up for James Beard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But so it is, and it's fantastic. So you have Laotian food. You have an incredible Asian district with fantastic Thai food, some great sushi here.
Yep.
And again, people say, oh, where are you getting it? No. If you can get Pacific, you know, sockeye in New York.
In New York City.
It's
faster here. That's right. That's right.
So anyway, no, there's a lot of great cuisine here. We got some great pizza spots. Let's see.
The Mexican food is amazing from my experience. I've had about 1,000 tacos.
Yes, a lot of, definitely a lot of good tacos here. So I think one of my favorite places is Red Prime.
Mm.
It is a steakhouse, but sitting at the bar at Red Prime is one of my favorite things to do because the food is incredible. Bartenders are fantastic, and it's just, I feel like it's a neighborhood spot, but it's not. It's right on Broadway, you know, one of the major restaurants right on that main strip through town, and but you feel like you're walking into your neighborhood spot.
That is something that I've definitely noticed, mm-hmm. by the way. It's like even like the top end James Beard award-winning chef or whatever it might be, there's still a community feel. Like I feel like there's not been a place we've walked into where someone hasn't wanted to strike up a conversation. truly.
Sure.
The guy, we met a gentleman last night at, what was it, James McNally's, I think, one of the places McNally's, in Midtown, and he had about 40 suggestions for us on where we should go. Very cool. No, there's definitely the community feel is like tangible. Yep. It's real.
No, it's exciting. As I was saying on our walk over here, the energy in the city is, you can feel it. It feels so good to be part of a community that just wants to grow, get bigger, get people here. I mean, it feels great to be a part of that.
I love it. And I will, I'll compliment the city on this too, because I love Chicago. Chicago is, I think, my city. But there's like, even though there are big and bustling and lively spots, there's a peace to it almost. Mm-hmm. There's like a calm to it that you wouldn't necessarily feel in a big city.
Yep.
Which has been really nice.
Yep. Yeah. No, exactly. And that's where it is. It's, you know, on those crazy nights out, you know, in some of those big cities, I'm sure like Chicago, certainly in DC, when then at the end of the night, you're just trying to get home.
Right. For sure.
And you have to plan accordingly. And, you know, whereas here, that plan is like, it's much easier.
That's right. For sure. So, there's an ease.
So it's just the ease of life here where you can have that, such a fun night out, have a great time, and still, you know, just easily find your way back home.
Find your way back, get some good rest, get up and get some coffee. And that's my next question. Okay, so you drink coffee?
Yep.
Daily?
I have to. Yeah.
Do you have a pretty good taste for it, or is it like whatever's around?
So, no, I would say that I do not. I love coffee, and I certainly have strong opinions, but I don't think that makes me a very
irrelevant. I want the strongest, most...
at all, because I'm not a big espresso fan.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm usually drinking, you know, drip coffee, black.
Me too.
Coffee, so...
Your favorite spots in Oklahoma City for just straight black?
Yeah, or I do like Bulletproof, you know,
put a little, for
stuff.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So that's the way I like to do it, which is you can't really get out. So I generally, when I go out, which is to say when I am going to buy a coffee somewhere,
bring your own coconut oil and butter?
So I used to. Yeah. Trader Joe's used to have little packets of coconut oil.
Oh, cool.
They don't do that anymore because it's so messy. Like I used to travel when I go to Europe and go to regattas. I would try and carry that jar, but as it turns out, it gets literally everything in your suitcase. But no, so usually when I go out, I'm getting espresso drinks. So I'll get lattes and cappuccinos. And right now, my favorite place to get a latte is a newer place called Toast and Coffee. Yeah,
Toast.
TNC.
Yeah, yeah,
Toast and Coffee. They're so good.
I have a bag of it in my car right now.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
From last night's event.
Well done. Because what I also love about this place is that the combination of the baked goods, like the food they have, and the coffee, both are on point. So
that's key,
right? Because there's a lot of great breakfast places or food places, pastry places that don't have great coffee, and there's a lot of great coffee that did it. But this place,
you have to have it.
You
can't be two stops.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. You can't be two stops. So
Toast.
That's Toast and Coffee. No,
Toast and Coffee. Toast and Coffee.
Toast and Coffee. Yep. Up on 23rd.
Okay.
Fantastic spot. It's close by to where I live, so walk over there on Sunday morning. Best little routine I got going right now. Yep. And then I would say, throughout the city, I do love Elemental, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's a pretty good combination. And let's see. I think Coffee Slingers. That's been around for a lot longer than these other
places.
It's right on Broadway as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So Slingers is fantastic.
See, I know even what streets things are on. That's pretty good.
That's right. I love it. I think those are some of the best right now. But there's a few.
Have you had Clarity Coffee?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Clarity.
I think Clarity's one. How about Junction?
Yep.
I like them too.
Sure.
There's a lot of great options.
Yeah, there's really good coffee. Culture Coffee. Just
Culture,
is pretty new right up here. So, a lot of good coffee options. But I think when you can't go wrong when you go into Slingers, for sure. They're going to have a really great cup of coffee. But, again, my favorite right now is Toast of Coffee, for sure.
Noted. And we'll be there
right.
before the week is over. All right, so now shifting to live music. But now that I'm saying the arts festival, is it called the arts festival?
Yeah. Fest, yeah.
Art Fest, yeah. Yeah. So
is this weekend, yeah.
Favorite music or concert you've seen in Oklahoma City?
It was, in fact, I think it was 2 years ago.
You had this one ready.
Yeah, so it was the first year that we had our big annual fundraiser after COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And Liz, who's here now, she was in town for the weekend, and my partner and I, Reagan, and Liz, we got tickets to Nathaniel Rateliff the night after the fundraiser, and it was right here in Brooktown at the Criterion.
And which one's the Criterion?
It's actually, you'd walk past it to get to your hotel from here.
Okay.
So it's as close as you can be on that, what's that, Reno, I think?
Mm-hmm.
It's right on the back side of there, but it's a pretty small venue, open floor, and it was a lights out show.
He's amazing.
He was incredible. And so we were kind of exhausted. We had the big fundraiser the next day, moved pretty slow. We said, no, we're getting to the show. And it was, man, it did not disappoint.
That's incredible.
He was incredible on stage.
He's so good.
He's so good.
She's laughing. It's on my Oklahoma City playlist. So I shuffled my Oklahoma City while we're driving, and he will come up multiple times.
I love it.
I've seen him live too. He like gets into it. He's got like his little shuffle. He's the best. Yeah.
No, I saw him, I think, when he first started going on tour.
Yeah.
So maybe 10 years ago now, or not quite. But so I hadn't seen him since then. And I thought, this is, you know, it's not going to be as good. There's no way he's going to still be that good, because that's always how it works, right? When you get into a new artist, I found these guys,
right,
and you go see them years later, and now they've got their shtick.
Mm-hmm.
Man, no way. He was as if this was his first and last show in life. And
that's amazing.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I would say that's definitely the best show.
Huge fan. Yep. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
All right, so even, like last night, to hear Olympians or Olympic hopefuls talk about what incredible facilities these are. So it's not like an opinion.
Right.
Or if it's an opinion, it's a really well-informed one. People who have seen everything in this country and beyond think the facilities here are absolutely top tier. Mm-hmm. This stretch of river is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see a night regatta with the stadium lights turned on. But the whitewater course, like so the facilities are amazing.
Right.
The city is fantastic and continuing to sort of bloom in all those areas we talked about. What else do we have to offer here from a training perspective or a culture perspective or whatever you think sets this place apart?
Right. I think that this place really defines what an athlete coming out of college should expect and certainly look for when considering, quality of life, as we've talked about, but also the resources to meet your goals as an athlete. So when I was coming out as an athlete to start, rowing at clubs and figure out, as I said, it was all over the place and trying to understand what a good location was and where I could, afford to live as an athlete, training full time, probably working part time, and also have what I needed from the coaching, the equipment, and all of those pieces of the puzzle. Now fast forward to today, where we have a few places in this country where athletes can train in the sport of rowing and be given a lot more resources than certainly I was offered and that most other places in the country can offer.
Right.
So, but what's really special about Oklahoma City is that you have this really just incredible community supporting the program here, right?
Yeah.
So you go out into the city and business owners and just, community members know this place.
Right.
And they want to know what it's about. They want to know how they can help, how they can be a part of it and support the athletes here, which I think is really unique. So it's this big city for our sport. But of course, there's rowing in Philly, there's rowing in Boston and DC. But here, we have this great city. There's a lot of good jobs here, right, which athletes, of course, are looking for when they graduate from college. But then we have, to go next to that, we have this incredible facility. We have our 2K course right here to train on year-round.
Yeah.
We have all of the indoor facilities that we, you know, that we need, certainly, and all the space, right?
Yep.
We're not limited, again, in these big cities where,
yeah,
you know, there's not a lot
in.
Of money in building a big boathouse,
right?
Right? It's,
right.
It's not, you know, bringing a lot of income to the city. So instead of putting in, you know, a massive hotel, they're, you know, got this little boathouse. That's, that doesn't work out for a lot of cities,
for
right?
Sure.
Planning.
Right.
Whereas here in Oklahoma City, no, let's go. It's bigger,
well,
the better.
This doesn't feel like a boathouse. This feels right. like a campus.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's the boathouse district. And that's always how we talk
right.
about the campus.
Well, yep. and talk about like city support. The mayor is literally
right.
at this moment,
yeah.
two buildings down, just
exactly.
hanging out with people.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
It's, yeah, exactly. So it's really well supported by the community.
Right.
This whole place is. So I think just being able to offer athletes not only what they need to be the best athlete they can be,
yep.
but also offer them, you know, opportunities to be part of a community, again, have a job, be involved socially, and, you know, enjoy themselves, just
yep.
enjoy what the city has to offer, right? Again,
right.
and not feel like they're in a city where they just, they can't do that. It's outside of their, you know, their means
right.
To enjoy the place where they live. So this this place to me really embodies everything that you would want to be successful at that point in your career as an athlete.
Right. It makes complete sense.
Yep.
And you have an amazing team around you too, don't you?
Yeah.
What are some, you mentioned this last time I was down, but what are some of the different areas that
well, right,
you have
we have our
in?
Whole, you know, support team
yeah.
That, you know, we meet on a regular basis just to connect on individual athletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're very athlete centered. We want to make sure that each athlete is getting what they need and not just
right.
the one size fits all kind of
sure.
approach, right? It's just not going to work if we're trying to get to the podium,
right.
for sure. So we have Liz Fusco, as I mentioned earlier. She's the U.S. rowing dietitian. She is certainly our go-to when
mm-hmm.
it comes to nutrition. But we've also onboarded a new local dietitian who works with the athletes directly.
Fantastic.
And then she, you know, stays in contact with Liz on all things that are rowing specific, and you know, so that's a really good connection. So we
mm-hmm.
have that piece of the puzzle with nutrition, and then we have our sport psychology
mm-hmm.
consultant. Essentially, he's our performance coach, our mental performance coach. Right?
Can't overlook
he's
that.
Fantastic. Yeah,
right.
It's critical, and he meets with the athletes on a regular basis. Sometimes we do in group, but always, you know, the opportunity to meet individually. Of course,
Shoot.
To define those individual goals. Within this kind of a team. And then we have our strength and conditioning coach, who
yep.
is just incredible. He's
yep.
so fun, and he's
You were
great.
Bragging about him
he's
last
really,
time.
Yeah, he's really good at what he does. He really motivates the athletes. He's able to use the weight room as just a classroom. You know, he really likes working with the athletes to make them understand how to use their body well.
So good.
You know, which is really cool. Yeah, so he does a fantastic job with them. And sets a lot of metrics so that the athletes are really knowing their progress and connected to that process,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic. And then, let's see, we have our physical therapist,
mm-hmm.
for sure, who will come down here. We have our own PT room where the athletes can visit with him, or they can go up to the facility where he works, the clinic where he works as well. And that's a great relationship that we have there. And kind of think. I think that's a really
that's a pretty
core
holistic
team.
Approach.
We have an
yeah.
MD. We have two MDs that work with the
mm-hmm.
athletes as well, too, of course, for anything that comes up, chronic or acute, which is also
important,
incredibly important.
Yeah.
And then we just have the full, you know, we have the full staff that supports them to just, again, really understand what it means to be, you know, a high performance athlete training at this level. So we've got just the staff of the River Sport Foundation that completely supports these athletes as well. So
it's incredible.
Yeah, no, it's really great.
That's the way.
Yeah.
That's the way to the podium, I think. It feels
it's a
like
great
it
formula.
Is.
Yeah,
it
it's
it is.
Fantastic
to have
formula.
Someone come to this campus in this
mm-hmm.
city, to have like an elite, high performance, absolute top of the game coach like yourself.
Yeah.
Sorry, but it's true. but strength, sports psychology, nutrition,
mm-hmm.
medical, like to be able to check all those
mm-hmm.
boxes.
Yep.
Here.
Yep.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah,
I would have liked that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. I think, oh my gosh, if only I can go back in time. But and we also have somebody that's currently getting their PhD in kinesiology.
Oh wow.
At Eastern Tennessee. So
yeah.
A really great program, and he works with us during the summers, and hopefully I can rope him into working with us a little bit more consistently once he's done with his PhD program. But that's, you know, that component of it too is just that the physiology piece. So doing the, having someone that's here doing the lactate testing. We all, we do have a physio lab that does our VO2 testing, but having the, you know, a little bit more access to more data and how to use that data.
Right.
Of course, that's where we're all headed and have been for a long time. I think rowing has generally been a little bit slow in the uptick on that. But having Nick Good is his name, join our team on a more regular basis, I think would be huge too.
Yeah, for sure.
Being able to use the data to, again, move the athletes forward. It's huge.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, I hope any aspiring athletes hear that and recognize it. And like, okay, so what if someone was an aspiring athlete that you're at like Stanford rowing and you're like, I'm not ready to give this up. I've got Olympic dreams, whatever it might be. Do they come down and take a visit? How does that work?
Right.
Is it like the college recruitment process?
Exactly. Yeah. They athletes come out and usually spend maybe 3 days, maybe a week here, or they come down for the summer or winter camps that we have. So we hold camps throughout the year, or you can reach out, you know, as an athlete, you can reach out. We certainly keep our eyes on the coaches, you know, that are coaching national team level athletes. Mm-hmm. We're keeping an eye on all the athletes that are, you know, in that pool that have the potential or certainly have expressed the interest in rowing for the senior national team and going to the Olympics. So in some cases, I'll reach out. In other cases, certainly athletes that are really on the ball and want to get out, they'll reach out and say, yeah, can I come out? Absolutely. So that's usually the first step. It's really get a feel for place.
Right.
Right. Because I think, again, it's at times can be really hard to understand what it means to be training full time, you know, coming from the college setting.
That's right, fair.
What that means. So, and I think that that's really helpful. They can feel it. They can talk to the athletes, just like any recruiting trip, you know, coming from high school to college, you need that experience to really get a feel. And that's the same kind of thing that we do here.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And maybe while you're here, you'll see Nathaniel Rateliff and have some good food.
If you're lucky.
I love it. All right. Well, I say this all the time, but thanks for all that you do for people. Jeff, and I mean that in like the biggest way possible. So
well, I appreciate you coming out and joining us for the event last night.
Yeah,
and,
it was a great event.
And all of you inspire all of us. Every time you come here, you give me so much homework and so many things to think about, and certainly inspire me to do, you know, do a better job in all just keeping track of all the things at the edge that are easy to let go of. It's really important that you're always very, very good at reminding us of, you know, the little things that actually can make a huge impact. It's easy for me to come to, all right, well, I got to stick to the training program. I got to stick to the big picture things, but it's often the things that we're not paying attention to on a daily basis that are the most important in a lot of cases, right?
I love being here. So I'm happy to support in any way, but it's you all that bring that to life. So you and your crew. All right. Well, thank you very much. You're welcome back anytime.
Do you need business cards? Do you need flyers, posters, custom thank you notes, or any sort of stationery to take your business to the next level? If so, then you've got to see the good people at Mighty Printing. They've got two locations. One of them's up north in Glencoe, Illinois. The other is right in the heart of Chicago on 180 West Washington Street. They do most of the printing for the Good Athlete Project, and we just could not do our business without them. They've also worked with teams like the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago Blackhawks. They've worked with Let Us Entertain You Restaurant Group. They do holiday cards. They do wedding cards. They help you not only celebrate special occasions, but make them that much more special. And like I said, if you are a small business owner or a large business owner, they will give you the sort of personalized service combined with incredibly high quality goods. You just can't find that combo, honestly, anywhere else. Find them online at mightyprint.com. That's M-I-T-E, print, P-R-I-N-T.com. And on Instagram, same thing, @mightyprint, M-I-T-E, print. And tell them the Good Athlete Project sent you.